Good afternoon.
Rob, how are you?
Good, Nico. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Busy, but all good, all good.
Good.
We are,
I got your email. So I went through it, and before I do that, kind of give me a sense of what you think you're learning from the coaching calls that you've been on.
What I am learning? Okay, so basically going through the process, right, and having the guys organized, and took a couple of notes here. I mean, let me step back, right. First on the process is trying to make sure that everyone that is going through the process is taking the most out of this, right? And one thing that, so today we had, I think I told you, I'm doing a lunch meeting with all the FAs that are engaged with you or have engaged. So it's four teams, right? The guy that already finished it, who did it with Rob Schaefer, Rick and Roxana, David, Rafael, and Gabriel, and Mijanu. Today, I mean, two of the four teams could make it, under CSAs, of course. But we are having that monthly meeting just to share ideas and to brainstorm. And then the other thing is how to keep them accountable and just on track, right? One of the things that we were talking is how overwhelming it is with the weekly meetings. It's kind of, you have the work, homework to do, you finish a call, and it's kind of when you blink your eyes and you're already there on the next call with a new homework. It's kind of nonstop. So feeling a little bit of the pain, the guys were telling Rick and Roxana, telling how they obviously keep track of the things that they need to do, but they haven't been able to do, but they know that spending and trying to just stay on pace, right? That's good. Again, meeting with the guys. I met with the guys briefly after your call and say, okay, guys, you need to. Now that it's fresh, you had a one-hour call. We discussed a lot of things. A lot of ideas came up. You need to now spend 15 or 20 minutes brainstorming what are the things that you want to do, create your list, and make sure you execute, because it's all about executing the good ideas. So, just specific things. I liked what you mentioned today about this FA that you're training that created the mastermind group was a trial for 4 months and how easy it was for her to do that. So that was interesting. Then we spent a lot about how to approach people and connect people, how to leverage with COIs, right? I think we kind of, without wanting, maybe just the issue came up and we spent quite some time there. So it was really, really valuable information about how to approach and how to connect people and how to make them talk. I like the idea of asking good questions about their business, so they kind of guide them to ask back what you want them to ask back. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful, because they don't know what they're doing in these interactions either, the clients. Mm-hmm. So you guide them into the conversation by asking them questions, and they'll be polite and just ask you the same questions right back, because they don't know what else to do. They don't know. They're as uncomfortable.
But that's what you want, right? That's what you want, them asking those questions.
You have to get them to talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just spending some time with an FA who's really struggling. He's a new FA, and I talked to him about, you've got to act as though you are interviewing them about whether or not they will be a good fit for you. And when you don't have very many clients, it's very hard to do that, because, you know, you feel unworthy.
You're desperate. You're desperate. Yeah.
You feel desperate. Yeah. And and that's the last thing, you know, people are drawn to confidence, not desperateness, you know, so they run away from people that are desperate.
You know, that confidence thing that you bring up is, I think it's important, and I think we discussed it when you were here. That first happened, obviously, to Abe Horowitz, right? Abe is my first FA that did it.
Yeah.
And one day he came to the office and said exactly that. He said, now I feel the confidence that I can go after a $10 or $15 million account, right? Before I didn't. I didn't have the confidence that I could approach a big client, ultra-high net worth business. And I think these guys today on the lunch, both of them had stories where they saw the power of the program. We talked a lot about that, right? How impactful the program is, because the story that the guys were telling this morning about the CPA that as they were telling them about the supernova, the guy said, oh, that's really great for me, who I'm a fiduciary, I'm managing many accounts and have a fiduciary responsibility for my clients, this is a great program for me. And then Rick and Roxana had a story for his biggest client where also, the way he opened and the way they started to talk about things they've never spoken, although she had been handling this relationship for 15 years. So the fact that they talked about the supernova and the process and the service and the financial planning, etc., all of a sudden, they see the power of that relationship, new standard of relationship. So I think that's what gives them confidence. But I think confidence is great. I think confidence is great. That's let me put some notes.
Very important.
Yeah.
The bringing them together, Nico, will help that, because I can't tell you how valuable that is to me as a coach and to them individually, because what happens is you may experience one good thing that happened to you, but you think, maybe that was just one client, you know? But then you go around the room and the next guy says the same thing or something similar. And the next guy says the same thing or something similar, and you go, my God, this thing really works, you know?
Yeah.
So it builds their confidence that it works so that they go back and then do it with more energy, more enthusiasm.
Yes.
And so you can't get that when you're just doing it on your own, because the only success you see is your own. So when you see others, it bolsters your confidence and says, this thing really works. So very valuable, very valuable.
Yeah.
So you hope you have those success stories. If you don't have them, then...
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But hopefully it works, and it's a positive vicious circle, right? It just generates a ripple effect.
Well, it will work, and the question is, you just have to get them. You know, one of the things that I want to work on is getting them to email me their report card, whether or not they make it or not, succeed or not. But it's one more way of saying I'm accountable. And so, you know, Friday before the, or Monday before the Wednesday meeting, you send me an email, you did the work or you didn't, or I'm going to get it done tomorrow and just before the call, I hope, and so on. It just keeps people engaged all week in the process rather than, oh, crap, it's Wednesday again. I got to get on the call or I have to listen.
Well, that's the big thing, you know, and that's where I'm still working through this, and actually this is a good topic of conversation today, is I would, if it were for me, I would meet with them, even you could even spend 2 hours a day, a week, or 2 half-hours a week, right? I want them to stay focused during the week. That's why I went today and say, guys, you need to create your list of tasks to do. But maybe something we can do, and both, and make them also from you, is some sort of structure for someone to keep them accountable. That's what I'm trying to do with them, right? Obviously, you never want to be so pushy, right? That's my thing. I don't want to be just breathing on their neck all the time, and they feel like I'm harassing them. But on the other hand, I don't want them to, a week went by and they didn't do what they wanted to do, right?
Right.
So, particularly with David and Rafael, I think they may be a little more loose in that sense.
Well, I think you can. I mean, you ask their permission to be that accountability coordinator, you know, that that
yeah.
guy. If they say yes, please check on us. Please come by. Please hold a meeting. Please 5-minute stand up meeting on how we're doing on this, because you know we're going to send you the copy of what we're committed to doing, and then at the end we're going to send it to Rob, and we'll copy you in on how we did. And you just, we don't mind you coming by and telling us, you know, and saying, hey, how are you doing on?
Actually, I'm going to use this call, and I'm going to say, because they know I'm doing so I'm going to say that
right,
this was one of the topics that came up for me as a manager to do this, so I'm going to use that as an excuse to go back to them and see if they want to, they want me to be that accountability partner.
Because people want that.
I think that's huge, you know. I think that's huge. I think I told you the story with marathon that I had, right? When I trained for the marathon this year for 3-4 months, and then in the summer I dropped the ball. I was feeling, I got injured. I stopped running. I said, go to hell. I'm not going to run this thing. I don't need to. But I had put myself out there with so many people. I told so many people that I was going to run it that it started to backfire, and everyone was coming back to me and calling and saying, how the hell that you're not going to run? You need to run. You should run, blah. And I felt that pressure, and I ran it, and I enjoyed it, and I did a great time. It was the best thing I could have done. But because I put myself out there with so many people, I didn't want to let them down. So
yeah, we call that a bilateral contract, okay? And in your case, it was a multilateral contract. So you first did it with one person, the person you were training with, and then you told others. So you went from a bilateral to a multilateral, meaning you had many people that you had committed to do this. And so it became very difficult for you to let them down.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you and I are doing. And that's why you're such a huge help to me as a coach, and I'm such a big help to you as a leader, is that together, you know, I tell them everything I know about how to do it, but you're there to say, hey, have you done it? And that's like money in the bank, because, you know, they made a contract with you. They made a contract with themselves. They made a contract with me. They're not going to let us down. And just seeing your face, you don't have to even say anything. You just walk
mm-hmm,
in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they go, oh, we got to get this. See, and then that becomes as important as calling their clients. The calling the clients is so easy. It's, you know, it's so easy to do. Calling the prospects, setting up the meeting with the centers of influence, creating your mastermind group, that's all very difficult, okay? Because it's confrontation, possible rejection, and all the things that we don't want. But we need, desperately need. And so we need a support group. So you're not the, oops, you're not the bad guy. You're the support group there to help them. What can I do to help? What can I, you know, talk to me. And they'll be like, thanks. Thanks for checking on us. That means I care. You know, it's like checking up on your kids or something. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm.
not showing up for the game. You know, you're showing up for the game, for God's sake. Come on. What's wrong with that? That's not pushing them. That's just showing up. Okay?
That's good. So, okay, so let's go over that. I also made some progress with the survey, client survey thing, but we can talk about that. I mean, we don't need to spend much time there, but basically I know we spoke about that last call. I got engaged with the team that runs that for the firm, so we're working on a client survey process, so... we did have we have everything in place, like you would imagine. So I just need to organize it, select a couple of groups, sell the idea to them, and start implementing a couple of teams at the time, because I really want to get deep into this, the responses. So I don't want to do a blast thing for the office. I want to go team by team and analyze the results, the impact, etc. So.
And do a team that you know is a big team, you know, significant, or a couple of teams that aren't doing Supernova, and then a couple of teams that are doing Supernova.
Okay.
And then just see if there is any difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to do that. Because I wanted to do Supernova just with my own district, and this guy Bob Dineen, I don't know if you remember him. He met me and he said, Rob, you can't just do it for your own district. That won't prove anything because you're there. You got to do Boston and the Midwest. And I said, well, that probably makes sense. Okay, so that's how we started, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did Boston and I did the Midwest. And, you know, we just had great success in Boston, so I kept going. So what you want to do is prove, frankly, that Supernova works in terms of client service.
So I told them today about my vision on the launch because I want them to be part of that, and they and I want them to own the responsibility too, because now these guys are the ones that are going to lead, help me transform this into a Supernova branch, which is I told them it's my vision. So. That was fun. So I told them all the purpose, mission, and vision exercise. I told them that at some point they need to do it because it will help them go deep into what they value and they care and the real reason why they do what they do, etc. And I told them my vision about creating a Supernova branch and how they are the first step towards that. So that was interesting. I think they also... They like being kind of the first promoters within the branch.
That's really good. That's really good. I love that because, you know, there is when you say it to yourself, it's one thing. When you say it to me, it's another. And then when you say it to them, now you've declared. You know, now you've declared you're going to run the marathon. So it. And it crystallizes in your brain. And so all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I think, you know what? This was just an idea, but I think we can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said to me, Rob, I don't know if we can have enough impact by just doing it one at a time. And I said, yes, you get a couple of rabbits and get them out there. And then you gradually get to the tipping point. You don't have to have, you can have 20% of your branch doing Supernova, and that's probably the tipping point where everybody is going to then want what the other guys are getting. And so all of a sudden it goes boom. Maybe it's 30%. I don't know what the number is, but there is a point where you don't have to do everybody. The rest will just come to you and want it. You're standing, mm-hmm. I just had another call, you know. Somebody wanted, you know, so it just starts, you know. So, anyway, you're great. I love your vision.
Let's see.
So what did the exercise do? Did you do this with your team? Did you do it for yourself?
It was interesting. Yeah, I did it. I mean, we had the conversation with the team. They were really far away from the process. None of them have, I think none of them have been probably exposed to even the concept of a mission, a vision, a purpose. So it was kind of awkward, but it was fun and it was interesting. And so we spent a lot of time talking a little bit about the things that we care, that we feel is important, leadership, teamwork, perspective, perseverance, honesty, some of the things that came up, values that came up, is most important, everyone caring about giving back and the community. So being part of something bigger and feeling good about my risk is funny. My risk officer was saying that he feels good about being valued and being able to provide help to people. He likes when people first come and ask him for help and he's able to help them, right? So, So that those are some of the things that that came up. Then what I did is I took most of that and I kind of put it on my own words. I haven't shared it with them yet, and I wanted to I wanted to discuss it with you first. But
here's what I would do. Okay, I would take the value. You came up with, everybody put their values down, and then you came up with like the top 5 or 10 values of the complex. Is that, are they offered,
correct?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So then you went and with your knowledge of the purpose and mission and vision, wrote it out. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I would do. I would not give that to them. Okay. What I would do is go back to them and say, okay, this is the next step. We did the values. The next step is for everybody to write out a purpose statement. Okay? Since you've already done it, you kind of know what to do. And you have them do it on their own, individually, in the room.
Okay.
Right there. Okay? And you talk about it, and then you have people read them. Okay? And they're going to be shy and not want to read them and all kinds of things, right? And you're not critical here. You're just listening, okay? And if you hear something that you really like, put it down, okay? And then kind of have the group talk about it. So what did you hear? What did you hear that you liked out of this exercise? All right? And then if you say, look, I'm going to take these purpose statements and I'm going to put them together in, you know, maybe I'll take a couple of you guys and the three of us, three guys, you know, we'll get together and come up with what we think is kind of a composite. We'll get back together and everybody, if you agree, that'll be our purpose statement. Does that make sense? And they go,
okay.
See, because then it's their purpose statement. You don't want it to be your purpose statement.
And should do everything, the same thing with the mission and vision, or the purpose
exactly.
is kind of the most important?
No,
same thing with three of them.
Yeah, right, exactly. And they,
okay.
you got it right, I think, in terms of the purpose statement is just a sense of purpose. What are we here for? If we weren't here, what would be missing from the earth? You know.
Right.
Why are we here? All right. The mission statement, I think the mission statement should incorporate your values. So I want to hear a little more about values in your mission statement.
Okay.
And I'd like your vision of creating the supernova branch. I think that's brilliant. That's
so as you can see. I mean, first of all, I struggled with what we discussed last time, which is I divided it into two: my personal and the office, right? Because I think it's they are connected, of course, but I think they are a bit different, right? So it's one thing is what we do as a business, and the other thing is what is my purpose and mission as an individual or as a leader. And then on the vision, so yeah, and then I. Obviously, I had two mission statements and two vision statements, which are different because I just different times I express it differently. So,
which is great, but now it's time to and you can help them. You can give them some, because clearly you've done the homework, so you can be the coach now for them. But you want to make it be theirs. So as far as your personal ones, great. You own them. Okay, that's yours. But when we're talking about the office, we want an office purpose statement, an office mission, and then we want the vision, okay? And I'd like to know when this is going to happen for your vision, okay? It isn't just...
What do you mean? On the vision to have a time frame?
I want to have a time frame, yeah. I want this to be concrete for you.
Okay. Okay.
That's when it gets
okay.
scary. Right?
Because no,
now
yeah.
it becomes a goal. You know, a goal
yeah.
is... A goal is just a wish without a deadline.
A goal is just a... Yeah. Target date. Okay. Now, isn't a goal different from a vision? I mean, should... Is
yeah,
the
but
goal,
can,
because,
I want
to because
be
the
like
vision
a
is kind of the longer term ideal dream, right, that you have, and you may never get there. You may never get to the full vision. But that's why that's your guiding principle. That's where you end state.
Yes,
where
it
you
is.
Want to
it
be,
is.
Right?
You're absolutely right. But between you and me, I want you to tighten. Maybe we make a goal then. Okay, maybe we call it a goal. Okay. Maybe we keep the vision as, yes, this is the vision of where we want to be, and maybe we'll never get there. So let's take the vision then and go into and create a real goal. Okay, in
right.
5 years, this is what I want to have.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, 3 years, right? 5 years is too
long.
Life
okay,
goes
fine.
Too fast.
I'm
we need to achieve
I'm
things faster. We don't
right.
have 5 years.
So here's one of the things that I did, which was so weird, and it all came true. You know, I set goals for myself, right? And I did it on a timeline with certain ages, and I hit them all. It's so weird. I was like, I did it. I did it when I was like, when I went into management. And I set these goals, and I said, I'll be here by here by here by here, okay? And when I got my office in Indianapolis, I went and I counted up how many $250,000 producers I had, how many $500,000, how many $750,000, how many million, how many $2.5 million, and how many $5 million, okay? And I said, my goal was to have I wanted everybody to be doing on average a million, right? So I had so many $1 million producers that I, so I basically figured out where I was and then I had, and then I plotted for each one of them where I wanted them to be. Okay. So I wanted five guys doing 5 million. That sounds kind of crazy, but it actually came true, okay? So you can do that. And I didn't give myself a time for that. I just said, okay, these are the people, they're capable. My mission is to get them to 5 million. And so I talked 5 million the whole time. I wasn't talking a billion. I wasn't talking 2 million. I was talking 5 million always with them. Only with them, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've done millions of studies about teachers that were given students and told that they were A students. And guess what? They became A students, but they really were never A students.
Yeah.
But the teacher thought they were A students, so they became A students.
Yeah.
So you know, you have your own vision. You know who people are capable, want to grow, capable of growing. Have the, you know, there's talent. I mean, along with everything else, there's talent, right? Some people just have talent, and they can just rock and roll. Those are the people you've got to keep on track. Because if they get off track, it's just sad. But when you get talent, you get ambition, and you get drive. Then those people can go to any height. That's who you recruit for. That's who you're hunting for all the time. You're not hunting for average. You're hunting for that special person that, given the proper amount of feed and nurture, will become explosive. And I never worried about the revenues, you know, the office revenues. I just worried about each guy hitting their numbers.
You put the number for them, or they put the number for themselves?
I put the number in my head and put it in their head.
Your head, right? Yeah. And you will talk to them all the time about that, right? So
that's right. Because they can't think that big. See, they can't think that big when they're doing, you know, they're doing 800,000. They can't do it. Think about doing 5 million. You know, they're doing 1.2 million. They can't think about 5 million. But you can, because you've seen it, right? So that's the thing. That's the key. It's once you're convinced, they think you're crazy, but they love you because you're thinking, I'm fabulous, right?
Yeah, I know what you talk about. And I've done it kind of sporadically, but I need to, what I need is to do it systematically and just repeat it and repeat it and repeat it.
You got to have the name and the person. I put it on the back of my business card. I used to carry it with me all the time. Small writing.
I have this guy that's doing, 300. He's going to do 500 maybe this year. And he's glad because he's growing 20%. I go, listen, I'm not happy. You should be $1 million producer in 2 years. I mean, there's no reason.
So right.
You shouldn't be happy because you're growing 20%. And the guy is
right.
He's happy because he's doing great. I'm doing great. I'm going to grow 20%. I go, no. That's
you're not Merck. You're not Pfizer. You're not Pfizer or Merck. You're a growth stock, you know. You're Amazon when it was first born. You should be growing 100% a year, you know?
Hmm. Okay. That's, trying to see how I'm expressing this.
So those, you know, when you get your guys that you have the right people, then you get them the right assistance, the right help, and the right coaching, okay? And then together, you and I just feed their brain until they become crazy.
Hmm.
Our goal is to have a meeting with them, and they get so excited they can't sleep that night.
But what do you want? What's the specific thing that you want me to do? You want me to select the? You want me to create a universe of people that have the potential?
And I want you to send it to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I want you to send it to me. I want you to write them down. I want to know who you think has the capability of doing $5 million, and who can do 2.5, who can do 1 million, who can do. But obviously, they're not doing that now, right?
No, of course. Yeah.
And then you put the time you put the time frame on it. You tell me.
Okay.
Don't even tell them that you're doing this.
This is fun.
See, you're masterminding the universe, right?
This is fun. I like it. Okay.
I was a crazy man. I did that, you know? I did.
Okay.
But it was, you're right, it was fun. And then watching them do it. Sometimes I didn't even share it with them, you know. I don't think I ever shared that list with anybody. It was just for me. It was just my group, my guys, you know, what I thought they could do. But I'd tell them what their goal was. But I never showed them my little card, you know.
Okay, and then what we do, so we create the group, and what are we going to do?
You're going to be just a psycho with them. You're going to just completely fill their brain with the future and opportunities. And it's really for you to create your vision of who are your players. And you know, when you see this guy down there, he's doing 1 million and you want him to do 5, you think of him as a $5 million producer from then on. And it changes the way you think about him. You know, he comes with a problem. You go, it's fixed, okay? You get back to work. you got a lot of work to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's creating the future for each. It's not going to be for each guy because there's some guys that, as you said at the beginning, it's not worth, and eventually they will follow. But probably 50% of the office, you can create a number for them within a time frame, right?
Right. Right. No, no, my list was not that long. I mean,
not half of the office, not even half of the office?
Probably not even half the office, no.
Hmm.
It was my talent, you know. It was the guys that would and wanted to and could. And that was, you know, that's where I spent my real energy. And I'd be I always said, I love all my children, you know. As long as they're in the office, I'm going to love them. But fair but not equal. I cannot give everybody the same. My time, my money, you know, my currency, I can't do it. But I can still love you and tell you you're wonderful and appreciate the fact you're here. Some managers are mean to their low producers and stuff, and I never was that.
Yeah, no, that's not me. Actually, I do care about everyone, and I care too much about everyone. So I like, as much as I like the big producer, obviously, to drive, and those are the ones that are moving the needle for you. I like about making an impact on a guy that is struggling and hopefully making him become a little more successful. And that's probably, when you look at purely where you spend your energy, probably I tend to spend a lot of energy there. Even with people that not low producers, I don't want them. I mean, I don't want to fire them. I want them to succeed.
But I used to call, you know, they'd say that about me. You know, you have a Jesus complex, you know. Mm. And it was a trap for me because, you know, that's not always the best use of your time.
Yeah, but it's rewarding, right? I mean, that's the reason.
Oh, of course it's rewarding. But don't get sucked into that. Make sure, you know. Big producers are starving to death.
Hmm.
And they think the big producers, they're fine. They're fine. They're doing great. So I need to spend time where I'm really needed. No, that's not correct. You need to spend your time where your real talent is. You think of it as an Olympic team, and you got to coach the Olympic players, and you have your other people in your organization are coaching the people that would like to be Olympic players.
Yes, but then talking about the brand, right? I'm sorry, I'm writing down listen to you when I talk, spend time with that. It's also your branding, right? I think people respect you a lot if they see that you care about the small fish as much as you care about the big fish. Because one thing is business, the other thing is just people, right? So actually, the guys that are struggling, the smaller fish from a human standpoint, need help more than the big guys, right? Even from a financial standpoint, maybe some of these guys are really struggling.
Right.
So the impact that you have in a person, it's bigger maybe with some of these smaller producers than with the big producers, right? So, and I think people respect you from that, right? People respect you. So you earn the big producer respect because you care about the small producers too.
But ask them about that. Ask them about how you think they think you should spend your time. Okay?
Hmm.
You know what they're going to say.
Yeah.
What do you think they're going to say?
With them, of course. Maybe I don't have a struggle with time. I don't know. It's not that I'm not being able to spend enough time with them. So maybe if I were that tight with time constraints, I could be facing that problem.
Yeah. So seriously, anytime you are questioning whether or not where you should spend your time, ask them. And they'll be very clear.
Hmm.
You know, if you have any extra time, you spend it with me, with my team, and with the big producers, okay? They will they will respect that a lot more than they will you spending time with small producers that are struggling.
Hmm.
That doesn't, look, You are who you are, okay? You're a giving, caring, good guy. But don't rationalize that your time allocation based on how your big producers think you're wonderful because you're helping small producers that are failing. Mm. They will not respect that. They will respect the fact that you, you know, you do everything you can, but you can't, you know, not spend time with them in order to, because I'll tell you, I cannot tell you how many managers get into that trap.
Hmm.
And the big FAs are going, where is he? You know, I never see him, their manager. Hmm. And if they do, he's spending time with the new guys or the guys that are struggling. And they're like, what the hell? You know, I spend my time with my best clients. What's going on here? So it's a real trap. And it may not be a problem for you because you are not that busy right now, but you should be.
One day you will be.
Yeah. One day you will be busy. And when you're running a, you know, a huge complex with 120 guys and all that, you're gonna need to know how to manage your time.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
And so you want to practice running your complex like it was a big office, like it was 120 guys, and make your asset, your allocation of time as efficient as you possibly can. And helping, I mean, look what you know now. Look how smart you are and what a big help you can be. I mean, you already know Supernova. I mean, you know how to help these guys. You can be a good coach. So just know that your time with them is going to pay off. When you do this little exercise I just gave you, you'll see the payoff could be huge.
You know what I struggle with is understanding when they need, when they want me. I mean, obviously, anyone that asks for help or asks for a meeting, I always make myself available. I mean, obviously, that's my first priority, my FAs, particularly if they are big FAs. So, no question about that. What I struggle a little bit is how to offer help, particularly to the big guys, right?
Right.
Because everyone wants to be left alone. And I don't want to be seen as the guy that is, hey, just knocking on your door like a wholesaler to sell you a mutual fund. So,
no. Okay, so
I would love to sit down with some of my big FAs and just have them, want them to want to be coached. But how do I make them want to be coached?
Because you build a vision. You know how we built that vision here for you now? You're getting kind of fired up about seeing your office with these big producers?
Yes.
You do the same thing with them. You go, you know, I saw that such and such has $3.9 billion in the Barron's list. How would you like to have $3.9 billion?
Hmm.
I wonder how he got that.
So it's planting a big vision, a big goal, aspirational goal in their mind.
Exactly. You know, number one on the Barron's list, number one in Florida on the Barron's list.
Hmm.
Can't do it with everybody, but you can with the ambitious ones. So you look back in their background, here's what I used to call it. I used to call it basically connecting the dots, okay? Every big producer was successful sometime in their life. Every producer, every person in your office was successful sometime in their life. And if you go back and into their profile, and maybe you have it there, and maybe you don't. Maybe you need to take them out to dinner and say, tell me about high school. when were you amazingly successful? When did you have the most fun in your life? You know, when were you the most challenged? When my my brother is a perfect example, right? He was a $600,000 to $700,000 producer for 25 years at Merrill Lynch. Nobody knew that he was number one in New England in tennis at 13 and 14 and 15 and played in national tournaments and ended up having a scholarship and was undefeated in college. And kid was amazingly talented, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so what you do is you go back and you say, Rick, tell me about when you were 13 and you won, you know, five different tournaments and you were number one in New England. Tell me about how'd that feel? How did that feel? That's your question.
Yes.
Right? And then how'd you feel when you were winning the Eastern Mass Championships and you went on to win, you know, runner-up in New England, you went to the national tournaments, you got the semifinals. And how'd that match feel that you won when you beat that kid that was, like, number eight in the country? All right? So this kid knows how to win, and he's won, and he knows the feeling. Now, the question is, how do you then connect that to what he's doing today, right?
Mm-hmm.
How could you not have – how could you have that guy in your office – and not have him be a multi-million-dollar producer? That's insane. He just never made the connection between the competitiveness of tennis and his instinct to be competitive and his ability and the job. Because he never had a coach. He never had a coach, all right? And some of your guys have never had a coach. They've had managers, and what they tell their manager is, stay away, leave me alone. What they tell their coach is, shit, I have no idea what I'm doing, how I'm doing it. I'm pretty successful, but God, I wonder what I could do if I really had a coach.
Hmm.
So you got to know. That's your other homework, all right? I want you to find out from your biggest producers what they did. Maybe they're number one and played first violin in the orchestra. I don't care, but they won sometime in their life. You got to find out what that was, and you got to go tap into that feeling they had then.
Mm-hmm.
And what would it feel like to be number one in Florida? Not just with our firm, but in the whole market. And why can't we be there? We're in a great market. You know the people. Just get them going, man. That's what you got to do. That's what a coach does, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. I can do that. You're a good coach. You can do that.
Yeah. Okay. That's yeah.
You think good coaches? Do you think the good coaches that you had in your life were the ones that were easy on you?
No.
Tell me about a coach that was inspirational to you but wasn't easy.
A coach that was inspirational and wasn't easy. Yeah, I can remember a coach in high school. That was it was pretty hard. Always looking for perfection. And you always felt that you could do better and should do better and you should train more. Yeah.
What was the sport?
He was always pushing.
What was the sport?
Rugby.
Rugby, okay. Good. That's a good, tough sport.
Yeah. And,
okay, So who did you like? Who ended up being the coach that was most valuable to you? The one that was easy or that one?
No, certainly that one. No, yeah, absolutely.
So you sit back and say, these guys want me to leave them alone. Really? I don't think so. Because they had the same coach, okay? And that's the guy they care about and they talk about.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, it's about inspiring them.
You know, the greatest words that were ever said to me was by like a fourth grade teacher to me. You know what she said to me? Rob, I'm so disappointed in you. I said, what? Huh? Why? Rob, you have so much ability. And look at the work you're doing in English. You got to do, you know, you can do so much better. Well, that just killed me. I liked it. I liked her, and I was so sad that she was disappointed. I knew at that age what disappointment meant. Who wants to disappoint somebody, especially a coach that cares about them, has worked hard, works harder for them than they work for themselves?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to focus on our big players, the ones that we leave alone. We're going to focus on getting them fired up. We're going to connect the dots by helping them to feel that same feeling that they felt when they were winning. And how can we create a world of winning here? What is that going to look like? And what, you know what I did? I'd say, okay, how much do you think it's going to take to get to where we need to go in terms of assets this year? And they'd say, 20 million. I'd say, nope, it's going to take 50 million. I said, how are you going to get 50 million? They'd laugh. Oh God. I don't know. But then, see, 20 million wasn't any good. So when they came in with 30 million, they'd be disappointed in the 50, but it'd be a heck of a lot better than the 20 they originally thought about. People don't know what good is or what they're capable of. You know that, right?
Yeah.
But you do. You know what they're capable of.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Good.
Yeah, this is fundamental to leadership and getting people to do what they know in their hearts they're capable of doing, but are, you know, pleasure seekers, and they try, you know, I'll get around to it tomorrow or I'll get around to it in 5 years. My brother spent his whole career being an average, pathetic, mediocre $700,000 producer. And then in the last couple of years before he retired, he woke up, joined a team because he was going to retire, joined a team, and in 12 months did 2 million.
Really?
Really.
Yeah, what I'm lacking is focus, because I kind of have done some of this, but sporadically and kind of without a specific group or target people. So do it with everyone, but you can't do it with everyone. So so you don't keep the heat, you don't keep the focus. I need to find out a little bit more of what fires them up. That's a good exercise.
Marathoner, one of the famous marathoners said, in order to win a marathon, you have to go a little berserk.
A little what?
A little berserk.
What does
you know
that mean?
Term?
No.
It means you go a little crazy.
Okay.
All right? So you have to become a little bit obsessive.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We had something in our organization. You know, I didn't know how to win, Nico, until I was a good player in tennis. I wasn't a great player. I was a good student. I wasn't a great student. I was a good Navy pilot. I wasn't a great Navy pilot. I joined Merrill Lynch, and I said, I'm going to be an admiral at Merrill Lynch, okay? Tired of being average. So I really went after it to be the best. And I was good, okay? I became good. I used to think I was the best salesman in the world. That's what
mm-hmm.
I used to say. I used to say that to myself so much I once said it to my boss. Anyway, because I wanted to be the best salesman in the world. But I didn't really understand winning until we had something we called the Masters. And when I came within a couple of points of my office winning the first year I was in Indianapolis, it was like the second year of the Masters. We didn't call it the Masters. It was an asset gathering campaign. You probably remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got so pissed because I came within a couple points. I sat, they made a video of the guys that won, and I sat there watching them, and I said, I can beat them. There's no way that I should be sitting here and they're up on the screen as winners. And that was it for me. That was the beginning. So I went to one of my guys that had won the Masters, and I said, how did you win? And he said, first of all, you got to know the rules, okay? Second, you got to figure out how to win it, okay? He said, only 20% or, in our case, probably 10% of the FAs even try to win. So you're not competing with everybody. You've got to understand that you got to know the rules, and then you got to know how much work you're going to need to do every day in order to win this thing. So we figured out exactly what we had to do. We had to bring in one client, one CMA account, one IRA account, and the commensurate assets. And we had to do, I think one a week, in order to win the whole campaign, and you'd be in the top 125 in the country. So whatever the number was. And I figured it out, and then I taught that to every single person that was capable of winning in my office. And we went from one guy winning to four guys winning. I had four guys in the top 125. And then I had eight in the top 125, and I was number one in the country. Now, it wasn't because I tried to be number one. It was because I got my guys to win. And when that guy taught me how to win that, I won, and then I never wanted to lose again. Okay, in anything. It made me a little crazy, okay, to get there. But once I understood what winning was, then I knew how to do it. It isn't hard. It's just more than anybody else is willing to give.
Hmm.
Okay, it's not that hard, but it's just more than anybody else.
And it feels great, right?
Oh, God,
it feels great.
It feels great. And I literally never lost. And they had no idea how much we put into winning that thing. They thought, Rob wins all the time. It must be easy. We've got to change the rules. Well, they changed the rules, and I'd still win because I'd learn the rules. I'd figure out how to win. And they think, he must be cheating. You know, he can't do this all the time. I did it because I obsessed over it. And I said, if I can get a financial advisor to win the Masters for 5 years, he'll be a $1 million producer. And I did it over and over and over. They all became $1 million producers. Okay? So it's just pure asset gathering in those days. Today, it's asset gathering with your minimums. But you gotta obsess about bringing in new business.
Yeah.
You can't be a part-time job. It's got to be an obsession.
And yeah, that's where people struggle the most. So that's where people struggle the most, right? They don't spend enough time gathering assets, and that's where I need to be more obsessive.
So what you have to do is you got to, for yourself personally, you got to say, okay, what is winning in our world, in my management world? You know, what is it? Is it number one office? Do you have recognition for the number one office?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm actually number three in the entire U.S. Last year I finished number two. So, yeah.
I'm talking, winning is
being number one.
Who is?
Winning is being number one.
Yeah, my dad used to say.
What?
Number two is the first loser.
Shit. Oh, yeah. So last year I finished number two.
So how are you going to be number one with Supernova? Is it help? Is that part of the reason, or is it just you?
I mean, it's both things, right? I mean, that will help. What do you mean?
I mean, what do you do to become number one? What do we have to do?
What do we have to do? Get more revenues and get more assets. Drive revenue and drive assets. That's basically the most important thing. Then you have other metrics like banking and recruiting. Recruiting is a little bit on hold by the firm now, so that's not much you can do this year. But by driving revenue and assets, I could get there.
So is there anything that you did that was extraordinary that you can't repeat, or is it all repeatable?
It is repeatable. I mean, we had some good inflows in assets last year. We had one big institutional account leaving this year. But anyways, I mean, it's just driving it, right? It's driving it. I mean, I'm really close. What is helping me, some recruits that came on board last year and the year before are really doing great in revenues. That's helping me. So, no, listen, I mean, I can drive it. I mean, I can try.
Well, I think this plan is going to help. Okay. You're dealing with a crazy man here, who loves to win and, loves to teach how to win, and you're already a winner. So we're going to have some fun. So I don't know you tell me what I can do to help you, but let's have the revenues are in your biggest producers. Okay. So you got to spend time with them and you got to get them crazy. So take them to dinner and make them crazy. Okay. Get them fired up. Talk about the future and the wonderful things that can happen and connect the dots to when they were great and love them and tell them that, you know, why you can be that. You can have that feeling all the time here. This is the Olympics.
Hmm.
You know, this is the national championship for whatever sport you're playing. It's right here. You can have the same fun. We can crush the competition and just have a blast.
Hmm. Okay. You got me thinking.
Good. That's what it is all about. I love the work you did on the mission, purpose, vision. That you got it. Hone in on that. What that goal would be. If I win. And you know, let's just turn the office into electric. You know, electricity. It's going to be crazy. It's great.
Okay. Good.
I like what the guys are doing from Puerto Rico. I think. You know, their whole thing is, I want to do business in Puerto Rico. My whole thing is, look, there's so many Puerto Ricans in America. Use the Puerto Rico opportunity to meet Americans that want to help. You use that connection then legitimately to help and do a good job, but an opportunity to meet them and connect with them on a
a special level that you may never get that opportunity again. So
right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
okay.
I think that's huge. And look at these guys that are coming out of the woodwork, billionaires that have won a show.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, where, you know, heck, where have they been? You know, but while Puerto Rico's had all their money problems, nobody cared. But now it's a national disaster. Everybody's coming out of the woodwork. So let's meet those people and start our connections and get crazy. That'll be that's
that.
A great
okay.
opportunity. Yeah, great opportunity for them.
Okay, I'm gonna sit down with them on that. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful, and don't be afraid to call on. You know, this thing is giving everybody permission to call on anybody they want to. So you can call on a billionaire. It's okay, and he'll probably take the call.
Mm-hmm.
And you may never have that opportunity again. But if he's got a way to help, calls on the billionaire, and they coordinate the effort, they make good friends, they do business together afterwards, and you got your $1 billion, you got your $1.5 billion in assets instead of, you know, $300 million.
Right. Okay. I like it. It was a good, very productive. A lot of work to do, though, but.
Of course. All right. Well, connect with me if you need anything. I like, you know, I don't mind the emails or the text messages or anything. So you need help or you got an idea, you just want to bounce it off of me, just send it on. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Rob.
Nicole, thank you, buddy. Look forward
to seeing
you
next week.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.